This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Sunday, October 13th. Or is it the 14th? It's the 14th, I'm sorry. Sunday, October 14th, 2018. And today we're going to talk about mental illness. A lot of you out there are probably very confused about mental illness. I know I was. By the time I got through medical school, I mean, nothing made sense. And I said to myself, wow, it's good that those specialists are going on to get advanced training and psychiatry, because this is not making any sense. Now, first let's just say hi to the Facebook crowd. All right, there we are. Hi, Facebook. Okay, so we're talking about mental health today. Actually, let's say mental illness first, and then we'll talk about mental health. But we always need a definition, because if we don't have a definition, you kind of really can't go anywhere, and you're going in circles, circles, circles. So, you might be encouraged to know that the definition of mental illness or mental health changes from year to year. So mental health has evolved into basically a social control contract. It has become a device to allow the government to intrude into every part of human life and interaction. For example, refusal of medical care for someone over 65 and under 5 is defined as neglect, poor mental judgment, and the person can be coerced into receiving medical care simply because under 5, the state, of course, has a prevailing interest in a minor. Over 65, you have elder care rules. Now, what about in between? At any age in between, a psychiatrist can declare a person incompetent and override their refusal of care. I have yet to see a case where a person was evaluated by a psychiatrist because they accepted care. But this is obviously, clearly a bias. So the whole profession of psychiatry is a tool to remove freedom from the individual and from anyone who may care about that particular individual. And obviously, if you remove freedom from people on an individual, one person at a time, then boom, no one has freedom. So further, the labels are used to create cultural uniformity of behavior. So what I'm going to do today is go over the mental disorder labels, what the definitions are today, and because I was in medical school in the year of our Lord, 1979 to 83, I can tell you what the definitions were back at that time. And many of you might be too young to remember, or maybe you weren't born, but in 1979 to 83, there was a fair amount of freedom in people's minds. People felt they should be free. People felt they should take responsibility. They felt they should make decisions about their lives. This is, of course, the way it was. Nowadays, people don't think that. People think the government should decide. The government should make this rule, that rule, the other rule. I just want to point out, all we have to do is take a look at the marijuana laws. In the 1700s, marijuana was not only legal, but you were obligated by law to grow it and use it to pay your taxes. Fast forward to 19-something, let's call it 1980, 1990, marijuana was illegal, it was dangerous, class one, totally useless. Oh, by the way, in the 1800s, it was used for medicine. Totally useless. This is laws, government laws. And now, marijuana is legal and medicinal and helpful. I'm not saying that marijuana is good or is bad. That's really neither here nor there. The point is, we have an agency or institution, we'll call it government, that is clearly incompetent to make that decision, not only for itself, but even for other people. And so what we have going on in psychiatry is that same institution, we'll call it government, is making, endorsing, and with the force of law, we'll call it police, enforcing these definitions. In fact, the initial definitions of the mental disorders involved the government. So if the government was not involved, then these definitions did not pertain. That was part of the definition. So let's get started. So let's talk about depression, depressive disorder. This is the definition that they have today for depressive disorder. So everyone feels a bit down sometimes. Okay, gotcha. But if you're sad and empty, I don't know what that means, empty, and have trouble concentrating, trouble eating, and sleeping for 2 weeks or more, you could have depression. Now, that's a pretty broad definition. And that definition basically could fit many healthy people. It's not a one-size-fits-all illness. It comes in many forms, each with slightly different symptoms. But depression can be treated usually with medicines, talk therapy, or both. Okay, so this is a definition of depression. Now, and then this definition, they're saying, could need medicines. So let's back it up, 1979 to 83. You were not depressed unless you had contemplated suicide and planned a suicide or attempted suicide. So if you didn't have a suicide attempt or a suicide plan, you didn't have a medical problem. So you can see how that definition has evolved to be so vague as to literally fit practically any person age 13 to 25 who's maybe unsure about their future, or maybe in an educational program where they're teaching him a bunch of gibberish nonsense and lies. That person might be pretty stressed out over how am I going to support myself with this information that is totally non-verifiable. And you got a kid, a college kid, pulling all-nighters during exam season. Well, geez, totally fits this definition. And, of course, he needs drugs, and many people do get drugs for those situations. So you can see how the definition of depression has totally evolved. Now, let's just take a little, let's just talk about first the present-day definition and then the old-time definition. So the present-day definition, feeling down, sad, empty, it may be because the person really is empty. Maybe they do have a life that's trivial and irrelevant. You know, there was a time when people from the age of 9 upwards, and sometimes lower than that, had a important task they had to do every day, and other people depended on them, and they felt, and this gave them a sense of importance. And so now, in our culture, people don't have a task they have to do every day that anyone is depending on them. People are conditioned not to have children, to move away from their family. You know, so there's no one staying at home helping out in any capacity in a reliable manner, day in and day out. And so if you are focused on stuff that doesn't matter, that's imaginary, that's irrelevant, you're sure you're going to have trouble concentrating. And eating, if you're eating, you know, processed, prefab, low-quality food, call it dining room food or institutional food, of course you're going to have eating issues. And sleeping, again, you can just chalk that up to the food issue, and you're not going to feel so good. So the cultural context that people have been coerced or conditioned to accept or put themselves in creates a situation where this definition could fit pretty much everyone, like I said, easily age 13 to 25. So that's depression. But what about the old-time definition? Suicide attempt or suicide plan? So the person hasn't got a suicide plan, and they have not attempted suicide, then medicines were not needed at all. Forget it. But what's going to drive a person to have a suicide plan and actually make an attempt at suicide? You could say life stress. But there are some devastating stresses that a lot of people endure, but not everyone who is subject to that stress decides to kill themselves. So let's separate that out. The ones who decide that killing themselves is a reasonable answer, and the ones who decide, hey, wait, I can handle this, or I can work something out, or let me go take a rest, or something like that. Okay, so the person who actually attempts suicide or has a plan, that person is different. Their reasoning process is influenced, but by what? Usually by poisons. Well, which poisons? Usually by the poisons in their food. So poisons in their food, chemicals in their food, and malnutrition. So those are the two things that set apart someone's going to attempt suicide and someone who's not. Now, the other thing we have to take a look at is the suicide numbers in the United States are very imprecise. A lot of those suicide numbers, I would say at least half, are the complications of drugs that are prescribed. That would be antibiotics, antidepressants. Those are the two big categories of drugs that cause people to actually commit suicide. And with the antibiotics, it's very interesting because the person can commit suicide, they usually commit suicide within 2 or 3 months of taking the antibiotic. And so a lot of times no one thinks to ask the question. And the psychiatric medicines, they cause people to commit suicide. So depression, answer simple, change the person's diet to 100% organic, unprocessed food with no chemicals added to anything that they eat. That's the diet part. Drink plenty of water. That's that part. Obviously, poop out the chemicals and poisons. And people have actually been cured of their depression, literally, by living in nature. In other words, go pitch a tent. It sounds stupid, but it actually has a beneficial effect. The clean air, the soothing sounds, the natural sounds of the birds and insects and whatever. So that's a rather simple solution to depression. Now, I actually knew this couple in upstate New York, and they had a preserve. And there were families who would actually bring their mentally disturbed family member there. And this is a preserve. I mean, there's not much there. And I used to go there for a week at a time, 2 or 3 times a year, and there is no running water. There is no electricity, not even solar. I mean, the major house has some solar, but the out cabins, no solar. So, but what happens is your whole system calms down because you just don't have the stimulation of the noise and the blaring, whatever. Of course, there's no cell phone reception there at all. So this is the major depression. As you can see, the definition has evolved to fit just about any and every American. Then there's psychological stress. And so psychological stress refers to the emotional and physiological reactions experienced when an individual confronts a situation in which the demands go far beyond their coping resources. So let's talk about coping resources. Everyone has coping resources, but the one coping resource, which everyone has access to, is disengagement. In other words, just removing yourself from the situation, saying, you know what? I'm not really happy with this situation. Let me just remove myself from the situation. Again, many people have the types of lives where they have trapped themselves in a situation where they cannot remove themselves. You have a couple, they're married, maybe they're having some marital problems. Their in-laws might live hundreds of miles away. And so the option, and maybe financially, they can't, one just can't leave and check into a hotel for a week and see how things go. So the logistical lifestyle people have fit themselves into with very few resources has created to diminish coping skills. I'll give you an example. When I was younger, I had this had a babysitter. Babysitter was married to a was married, and the marriage was not going too well. The husband beat her every day. She was unhappy with this. She liked him a lot. She loved him, but if only he would stop beating her. This was her view of things. So one day she decided that she didn't want to get beat anymore, and she just left. She walked away and moved in with her mother. Took about 4 days, and he figured out where she was. Went to her mother's house and said, "Well, honey, what's the matter?" She says, "Well, you're beating me, and I don't like it when you beat me. It really hurts." He says, "Oh, I thought that's just what men did. Well, if you come home, I'll stop beating you." She came home, stopped beating her, no problem. Now, if her family had been maybe out of state, not just 5 miles away down the road, they might not have had, she wouldn't have had that coping resource. Her daughter was not so lucky. So her daughter got married to a guy, and things were going pretty badly. The daughter went to the mother and said, "Oh, Mom, things are going very badly. What do I do?" And mother says, "Well, is your husband, stick by him. And the daughter, unfortunately, was brutally beaten, ended up in the hospital, whatever, and just did not have a happy ending. So what I'm saying then about these psychological stress situations is, number one coping mechanism is to remove yourself from the situation. And this, of course, does not involve drugs. So situations are marital problems, death of a loved one, abuse, health problems, and financial crisis. Again, all of these, if you have a social network in place, you can usually just check out and say, "You know what, I'm going to go leave the situation, stay with a friend, a relative for 3, 5, 10 days, 2 weeks, or whatever, and sort things out." But the psychological stress, of course, the answer, medically speaking, is drugs. But removal works very nicely for this situation. And then being careful to construct a life that does not go beyond your coping skills. Everyone has a different level of coping skills, and that's fine. The key is to construct a life where the stuff you have to cope with is well within your skill level. Dissociative identity disorder. This is known as multiple personality disorder, and it's characterized by at least two distinct and relatively enduring personality states. So there's often trouble remembering certain events beyond what would be explained by ordinary forgetfulness. So the treatment is supportive care and counseling is caused by childhood trauma, and duration is long term. So multiple personality disorder has been renamed dissociative identity disorder. And of course, they say supportive care and counseling, but really there's a couple of reasons for having more than one personality. One, the individual does not feel safe in a particular situation, and they have to create a secondary identity. And so depending on the situation, they feel safer with one identity or with the other. So that particular person needs to seek out a situation where they are accepted no matter what their behavior or throughout their particular behavioral range. Now, the other thing that causes multiple personalities, and some people, you know, have been documented with hundreds of personalities, is parasites. And literally, it's almost as if each parasite population will take over and create a certain behavioral pattern and identity. And that's very, very interesting. And so the answer, of course, with that is just cleansing and some turpentine. So mood disorders may increase your risk for suicide. Some examples of mood disorders include depression. So mood disorder is basically a synonym for depression. Prolonged and persistent periods of extreme sadness, again, same as the definition for depression. Bipolar disorder, called manic depressive or bipolar affective disorder, depression that includes alternating times of depression and mania. Now, manic depressive disorder, again, the definition of manic depressive disorder, 1979 to 83, you didn't have a disorder unless the police had to be called. So if you didn't have depression characterized by a suicide attempt or mania characterized by a homicide attempt or serious assault where you assaulted someone, then you did not have manic depressive disorder. And so nowadays, manic depressive disorder is just if you feel sad or if you feel excited. And of course, obviously, in the normal course of events in life, happy things happen. Maybe you get married. Maybe you go to someone else's wedding and you're very happy about that. Or maybe you're sad. Maybe your house burns down or something like that. So life has ups and downs, and this is totally, absolutely, completely normal. And so this definition of psychosis and manic depressive disorder, as you can see, simply allows more and more people to be diagnosed as having these problems. And so psychosis is basically a synonym with bipolar disorder. So you're getting the gist here. And so the new definition of bipolar disorder is a disorder that causes unusual, and so who's to say what's usual? I don't know. Shifts in mood, energy, activity levels, and the ability to carry out day-to-day tasks. Now, I don't know about you, but some days I get up and I'm pretty good. I've got lots of energy. Other days I get up and, you know, things are kind of dragging. Does that make it bipolar? I don't think so. And so they have four types of bipolar disorder, and all of them involve clear changes in mood, energy, and activity levels. Again, the biggest cause for activity level changes is changes in nutrition, changes in sleep. So if you're getting regular sleep every night, going to bed at the same time, getting up the same time, this goes a long way to getting rid of unusual shifts in mood, energy, and activity. And again, dietary changes. For me, when I stopped eating dairy, for example, my mood shifts prior to my period just disappeared. I had even disposition all month long. So most of these mood shifts are due to dietary deficiencies as well as sleep deprivation. Now, post-traumatic stress disorder, this is very interesting. So this is something that has been around at least for as long as there's been war. In World War II, World War I, they called it being shell-shocked. This person was shocked by all the horrors of war. And it's persisted when they came back. So this is an interesting situation. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a disorder that develops in some people who have experienced a shocking, scary, or dangerous event. Everyone in their life has experienced a shocking, scary, or dangerous event. It's just the way it is. Maybe you've had a near-miss car accident, or maybe you've taken a ride in a plane where there was a lot of turbulence. So everyone has had these events and has them pretty regularly. Now, those who continue to experience problems may be diagnosed with PTSD. Now, again, it's helpful to decipher out who has long-term problems with this, who doesn't, and how to respond effectively when people have those long-term problems. So post-traumatic stress disorder. So we know war. Okay, got that. They have to shoot at people. People shoot at them. Constant risk of danger. Every day is a stressful, traumatic day. So what's the cure, though? So my husband went off to war when he was a teenager, and he was given the assignment of assassinating people in Vietnam who were trying to make peace. And after he assassinated about the 45th person, he noticed a pattern that these people were pretty harmless people he was killing. And when he thought about that, and when he came back to the United States, he realized, oh my God, the terrible thing that he had done. Now, what he did, and which I think really is the cure, is space to find an activity or situation where you feel valued and safe, and also space to just decompress and do nothing. And he literally took off 2 years and traveled the United States on a motorcycle, just stopping here and there, doing some farm work, you know, to have fun, staying, you know, at various places. So, and then once he got through with his 2 year sabbatical, he started a self defense school so people could defend themselves from bad guys, and then he became a police person and ultimately assistant chief of police, and did all types of security system things to help what he felt was good people stay safe. Now, I had a traumatic situation. I was pregnant, and I went to the hospital to have my baby, not something I would recommend. And the doctor decided that I needed a C-section, and he sliced my belly open with a knife without anesthesia. That was pretty traumatic. And, of course, there was one complication after another. 17 days later, I went home with this baby, and I had no use of my hands for 5 months. And that was pretty traumatic, and that was very stressful. And for me, the way I got over that was I had to somehow remove myself from that trauma. And so what I did with the next baby I had, I just had it at home. So I didn't go to the hospital. There was absolutely no chance of a C-section or any trauma. And it was actually a pretty easy birth. Then I helped other people avoid prenatal care and unnecessary surgery by doing home births and helping other people avoid that trauma. So that, I think, is a positive way to cope with post-traumatic stress disorder in a person who, you know, has a reaction to it. Now, the other thing I found, I also did a lot of fasting, that a water fast, literally a water fast, about 4 to 7 day water fast, actually wipes out trauma. It clears the slate and gets rid of holding on to strong negative emotions. So it's actually for years after that traumatic surgical event that I had nightmares about that. And now, of course, I don't have any nightmares about it. It's, you know, in the past. But fasting, I found, was a very good help. The important thing about fasting is, water fasting, is the circumstances of the fast need to be non-traumatic. So you need to be in a physically, in a place where you feel physically safe and you're calm and you're relaxed and there's no stimulation at all. In other words, no TV, no radio, no cell phone, nothing. All you're doing is fasting and allowing your body to reorganize itself. Now, here is what they say. This gives away the diagnosis of being totally bogus. Not every traumatized person develops ongoing chronic PTSD. Not everyone with PTSD has been through a dangerous event. Well, wait a minute. So this is a label that they can literally slap on anyone. Some experiences, like a sudden unexpected death of a loved one, can also cause post-traumatic stress disorder. And the important thing about these modern-day definitions is they're very vague, they're not precise, there's no objective measure, and they can be applied to anyone. And this means, literally, that the government who certifies these definitions, who certifies insurance companies that pay for these definitions to be placed on people, has the ability to label anyone with any of these titles. And that's really what's going on here. Obsessive compulsive disorder. This is a mental disorder that affects people of all ages and walks of life and occurs when a person gets caught in a cycle of obsessions and compulsions. Obsessions are unwanted, intrusive thoughts, images, or urges that trigger intensely distressing feelings. This is interesting because the definition...
Burden.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Many people write about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. My wife and I both use Extendivite and are very pleased with the results. It has helped to stabilize our blood pressure and to make both of us feel healthier. Good product and goodbye. So far, so good. I've been taking Extendivite 3 times a day, only a short while now, but already I've noticed the circulation in my hands and feet improving. They tingle. I like the idea of taking something herbal rather than pills. I take Extendivite 3 times a day every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Maybe take away my name. Fever, lay your hands on me. Never be the same.
This is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. Okay, so someone in Facebook mentioned the term gaslighting. This is an important term. Gaslighting is by psychological means to manipulate someone into questioning their own sanity. And that's exactly what the psychiatric profession is doing to each and every American. And so literally what we are in the midst of is something called gaslighting. These disorders, in terms of psychiatric disorders, as you can see, are pretty bogus. So let's talk, we're doing obsessive compulsive disorder. So back in 1979 to 83, in order to have obsessive compulsive disorder, you had to actually act out something. In other words, a thought that was keep going around and around and around in your mind, that was not obsessive compulsive. You had to act it out. In other words, washing your hands 100 times a day, for example. cleaning the same spot 50 times. You actually had to have an action corresponding to the thought. So the new definition of obsessive compulsive disorder, the person just has a thought disorder. They have an unauthorized thought. They have a thought in their mind that somebody, maybe a psychiatrist, thinks they shouldn't have. Or the thought appears more often than the psychiatrist or government thinks it should appear. So this is an especially troublesome definition. So obsessive compulsive disorder is a disorder that has no behavior associated with it. The person just has distressing feelings and distressing thoughts. There's no acting it out. There's no manifestation of the disorder. And then schizophrenia, that's my favorite. I love schizophrenia. Now, the reason I like schizophrenia is, for me, schizophrenia was the classic disorder that I was stuck on trying to sort out for decades. And in medical school, schizophrenia, back in, again, so in 1983, was defined as you had to have voices in your head telling you to do things that were bad or unlawful. So some kind of criminal or harmful activity, you had needed voices in your head that repetitively told you to do these things. That was an schizophrenia. So that was an auditory delusion. The next thing with schizophrenia, so you had these voices telling you to do something, and you actually had to go do it, something, whatever it was. So you need a behavior manifestation for schizophrenia. The other thing with schizophrenia is you had to have a thought that was delusional and then act on that thought. So you can have voices in your head, you're acting on those voices, or you have just a thought. For example, I had a patient who believed that she was going to get pregnant from people who were raping her. Okay. Now, she lived in a house with her mother in her bedroom, and she never went outside. So, and then there were no men in the house. All right. So this is clearly a delusion. But the mother said, you know what? Let's just put an end to this. Let's put in implantable Norplant birth control, and that way she can't get pregnant for 3 years, and that'll take care of the delusion. Ha, ha, ha. So, of course, I was the caring doctor who did this, and of course, it did not help her delusion. She just simply picked up an extension of that delusion, and it didn't help. Now, the other thing about schizophrenia is schizophrenics, again, 1979 to 83, acted out their delusions. I mean, really did. In such a way that generally the police had to be called. So they would trash their parents' home. They would get in their mind that somebody was going to harm them. They would go harm that person first. So schizophrenia had manifestations. You just didn't have someone come in and say, hey, I'm hearing voices. Can you give me medicine to stop the voices? It's like, well, what are the voices telling you? Oh, they're telling me that the Easter Bunny is going to come on Easter. You say, well, that is a delusion, but it's harmless, not needing medication, so go on your way, keep your delusion. That's the way it would have been handled, 79 to 83. But now, people with delusions are actually medicated, even if there is no concrete manifestation of the delusion. So again, in the old days, a thought problem, a thought is a thought, and it was believed thoughts that don't become actions, forget it. No problem. But now, we have a whole body of mental illness that's defined as simply a thought. So if you have a thought, and that thought is one that the medical industrial complex, with the blessing of the government, has defined as inappropriate or undesirable, then that thought is worthy of medication and intervention. And let me just see. Yeah. So schizophrenia is a chronic and severe mental disorder that affects how a person thinks, feels, and behaves. People with schizophrenia may seem like they have lost touch with reality. Although schizophrenia is not as common as other mental disorders, the symptoms can be very disabling. So the key thing about the new definition of schizophrenia is it does not necessarily involve a behavior issue. This next disorder is very interesting. Oh, so schizophrenia, why it's so important to me. So in medical school, these people would come in with schizophrenia, and it was like a mess. Of course, let me tell you, there were zero cures. And when I was in, and they were drugged. We drugged them with all kinds of antipsychotics and stuff. It was, trazodone. And then when I got into private practice, things got to be much more concrete. Families would bring these crazies in, and they were not only crazy, but they were in my neighborhood. These are people I could bump into. And I said, well, wait a minute, we gotta do something about this. And so the one crazy was a boy, a young man, he's like 20 years old, confined to a wheelchair, live with his parents. But he was very energetic, and he would take his wheelchair, wheel it out of the house, and he would rob or attempt to rob convenience stores. And so he'd roll his wheelchair into the convenience store, tell them he was robbing them, and demand to receive money. Well, of course, they just laughed him out of the convenience store. Of course, the parents were embarrassed and humiliated to even have a child that does this. And so they came to me for help. And he was also getting more and more difficult to manage at home. And so I talked to him, and he clearly, he had mania. He wanted to assault and rob people. That's the manic part. He was depressed. He was occasionally trying to kill himself. And he just had bizarre delusions as well. So what cured him, and once we got him straight, which was about 1997-98, he has stayed sane until now, and still now. I hear from him from time to time. But what got him straight was a juice fast, enemas, and turpentine. And, he was not willing to cooperate, but his parents, had him cooperate. And we had difficulty with him. He didn't want to take turpentine. And so what we did was we took the turpentine, put a few drops on a cotton ball, and put it at the bedside. Then we had the problem with him aggressively getting sugar in the house and eating it. And so what we did was we took the whole bag of sugar and we put like 20 drops of turpentine in the bag. That's what I told the parents to do. And that they would have to, if they wanted sugar, do without or go outside the house if they wanted sugar. And so when we put the turpentine in the bag of sugar and put turpentine cotton balls by his bedside, that was a big help. That helped settle him down. And then the father was physically strong enough so that when he was physically difficult, the father was able to restrain him. And it seemed like forever, but it only took us like 3 months. And the voices went away, the behavior went away, and, he now works, he has his own place, he has a girlfriend, and just a regular, ordinary life. And so that really did it for me for schizophrenia. And I said, wait, if schizophrenia can be resolved like this, what about other mental diseases? And so schizophrenia, for sure, no doubt in my mind, was toxicity and parasites. Now, the next disorder, which I think we need to cover, is somatic symptom disorder. Now, the old days, this was psychosomatic disorder. And in the old days, psychosomatic disorder was a disorder where the person had chronic pain or physical symptoms that the doctors and medicines were unable to cure. How big a number is that? And so then we would say to the person, oh, it's all in your mind. You're having this pain because you're crazy. This pain is imaginary. So apparently, that didn't fly too well, so they renamed it somatic symptom disorder. And that occurs when a person feels extreme anxiety or about physical symptoms such as pain or fatigue. So those of you out there with chronic fatigue syndrome, you've got somatic symptom disorder. Those with chronic pain, you have somatic symptom disorder. The person has intense thoughts, feelings, and behaviors related to the symptoms that interfere with daily life. I mean, like, who wouldn't? How is this a disorder? Of course, if you have pain all day long and you can't engage in your normal adult activities because of the pain or because of the fatigue, well, that's going to bother you. And so here they say the pain and other symptoms are real. They may be caused by a medical problem. So basically, if the doctor's not able to help, if the doctor's ineffective, then the patient has a disease, a psychiatric disease. This, I think, is seriously cool to be able to pull this one off. Let's talk about really just two more disorders. One is alcoholism, and the other one is ADHD. So alcoholism is defined as consuming alcohol to a degree where it adversely affects your health. That sounds good until you look at the scientific article that declares there's no safe amount of alcohol. It says overall, consuming just one drink a day increased the risk of developing alcohol-related problems by 0.5% compared to abstaining. Drinking five drinks a day led to 37% increase in risk. Of course, they never tell you what the baseline risk is. We're supposed to be alarmed by these percent increases, but let's just say we're going to go for it. So if even consuming one drink in a day can cause medical problems, then the definition of alcoholism is one is a moving target. It could be even drinking one day drink to drinking five drinks to binge drinking. And so they also say alcoholism is known as an alcohol use disorder, broad term for any drinking of alcohol, emphasis any, that results in mental or physical health problems. Now, the other thing about alcoholism is they have these people called high-functioning alcoholics. Wait. If your alcohol consumption is not interfering with your health or your physical activities, it's not alcoholism. And if it is interfering, then it's alcoholism. And, of course, the question is, does the person want to do anything with it, about it? Do they want to live with these medical or lifestyle complications? I don't know. So you can see how adjusting the alcoholism dose, or definition rather, gives the government and medical industrial complex the authority to criminalize alcohol at any consumption level for any particular individual. And so this newfangled definition of alcohol is interesting. And then the definition of a high-functioning alcoholic is interesting because now we separate the high-income alcoholics from the low-income alcoholics. And that has a lot of economic implications in terms of exploiting the high-functioning alcoholics and saying, hey, you're an alcoholic, you're high-functioning, therefore we're going to slap you with these fines, those fines, or whatever. Then we have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It's inattention. It means a person wanders off task, lacks persistence, has difficulty sustaining focus. Now, again, and is disorganized. And so for children, this is totally normal because a lot of times we adults assign to them activities that just don't make a lot of sense to them. And they don't think are very important. And in the absence of corporal punishment or other penalties, it's difficult to handle this attention problem. However, and that's in a normal kid. In a kid who has abnormal inattention, it's very easily handled by a quarter cup of rice bran a day. And you can hide it in the hot cereal, you can hide it in tea, you can hide it in muffins, however you want to feed it to the kid takes care of it nicely. Hyperactivity means a person seems to move about constantly, including in situations in which it is not appropriate, or excessively fidgets, taps, or talks. Again, kids have no outdoor time. Humans are made, designed to go out, pick their food, harvest their food, forage for their food. That's a lot of physical activity, I'm telling you. And you have this human being called a child, and you're going to sit him in a chair for 3 to 8 hours a day. Yes, he's going to fidget, tap, and talk. That's if he's a normal kid. So a lot of the hyperactivity we have is the situations we put these kids in where they have no recess, where they have no physical time, where they have no time to run and exert themselves physically. So in adults, it may be extreme relentless restlessness or wearing others out with constant activity. Again, this hyperactivity situation, people who are hyperactive like this need to reconfigure their life situation so that they have an opportunity to be more active. When I was in medical school, I entered medical school from college. In college, basically you had 3 hours of courses, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and the rest of the time you spent basically doing assignments and studying. In medical school, you literally had 8 hours a day uninterrupted classes in the seat time. And I could feel my health just deteriorating. Of course, I wasn't hyperactive, but I realized this. We'll talk more when we come back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Give such delight. We all leave before morning light.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. Okay, so we're talking about the ADHD situation here. And a lot of what has happened with the ADHD situation is we have asked human beings to endure an inhumane level of confinement. You know, prisoners in solitary confinement are allowed more physical movement than a child in your day-to-day academic or school environment. So what we have done then is we've taken a human being and put him in a totally unnatural environment, one that's actually hazardous to their health. And we're calling it a disease when the individual is not able to endure that. I mean, even myself, working online, sitting here talking to you, if I do this for 8 hours, 10 hours a day, every day, for 6 days a week, which I used to do, then what happened was I literally became unable to walk. And so now I've had to cut back and spend more time actually walking and spend more time actually giving my legs exercise. Of course, I do things I enjoy doing, but human beings are made and designed to walk, not to sit for long periods of time. And so it says, in adults, it may be extreme restlessness or wearing others out with constant activity. So if I'm around people who think my activity level is too high, then I'm hyperactive. And so obviously the solution is to find a more active crowd as an adult. Okay, impulsivity means a person makes hasty actions that occur in the moment without first thinking about them and that may have high potential for harm. Again, high potential for harm. So we have here a person engaging in activity that is not harmful, that's not harmful, but has potential for harm. Example, I just posted some pictures of me riding a bull. Clearly, I made the decision to ride the bull rather impulsively. I saw the bull. The person who owned the bull said, hey, would you like to ride my bull? And I, okay. So that was a pretty quick decision. And yes, it had a high potential for harm. This was not just any bull. It was a water buffalo, which if you know about water buffaloes, they are notoriously ill-tempered. So Matt was, you could say, impulsive. Do I need medications for that? I don't think so. And so there's another kind of impulsivity, though. For example, when I was at the prison, students were very impulsive, and they would start fights with each other. They would do rude things. They would break the rules. They would curse. But once they got that quarter cup of rice bran, by golly, they became charming, and the atmosphere in the prison was like a really like a country club. Everyone was saying yes, thank you, please. It was amazing. So they have signs and symptoms. Not seem to listen when spoken to directly. Doesn't follow through on instructions. Nonsense everyday activities. We're going to commercial. We'll be back and we'll talk more about this.
I saw you there, just standing there. And I thought I was only dreaming, yeah. I kissed you then. Then once again, you said you would come and dance with me. Dance with me across the sea. We can feel the motion.
Extendivite. Made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle, feeds our body with the nutrients we need to keep healthy. Just listen to what Arthur had to say.
I was just calling to tell you what a great product you have. I had used this about 10 years ago after I had congestive heart failure. And it fixed me up and got me going for the last 10 years. Lately, I've been having heart trouble again, so I placed another order because this was the only thing that ever worked. And I just wanted to let you know that you have a great product. Thank you very much.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-877-877.
928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to the